Hi everyone, this is Erin Prather Stafford with the Girls That Create podcast on Word of Mom Radio. Our guest today is award-winning writer Jess Rinker, who has written several books for young readers, including picture book biographies and middle grade fiction. Rinker has a BA in social welfare and an MFA from Vermont College of Fine Arts. In addition to writing for children, Rinker's creative nonfiction has been featured in Feminine Collective, Creative Parents, Family Circle Magazine, and other publications, including a recent guest post on the Cancer Hope Network, chronicling her experience as a caregiver while living in a rural area. Rinker is also one of the first interviews ever posted for the Girls That Create Creator Spotlight series, and I am thrilled to talk with her again. Welcome to the Girls That Create podcast, Jess Rinker.
Thanks, Erin. It's great to be here.
I always love to start with this question. When you were younger, was there a book or a movie or just something that you saw that really impacted you as a child and made you fall in love with storytelling?
You know, I was thinking about your question before. There's so many. I don't think I can actually pick a single story. And I wasn't like a really big rereader of books as a kid. I still am not a big rereader. Something will latch onto me and I'll just will remember it forever, but I don't necessarily revisit things as often as some other readers do. But I would say as a child, those books that did stick with me are the ones that still stick with me today. Those books are the ones that, I don't know that they're life-changing, but they're definitely life-influencing. And I was like, Little Women was a big one for me as a kid. My Side of the Mountain was a big one. And I also loved The Babysitter's Club and all of Judy Blume. You know, all of those books were huge. But I also transitioned to adult books very quickly because back in the early 80s, there wasn't a whole lot for kids. It wasn't like there is today where there's just tons and tons of choices. And so I transitioned to Stephen King and Dean Koontz very quickly. I just started reading whatever my mom had, basically.
You know, there's a certain generation who was like, did you read Flowers in the Attic? And everyone goes, yeah, I read Flowers in the Attic. it was kind of everywhere for a few years.
Exactly.
How did you transition your career to becoming an author, and what drew you to children's books and young adult fiction? You have a love for it when you were younger, and you just mentioned there wasn't a whole lot of it for a while there, and now it's just suddenly exploded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think what really made me think myself into it was I was always writing. Most writers are. It's kind of something I've been doing since I was a little kid. And then I started to really take it seriously when my kids were little, and I was reading to them all the time and seeing how much they would fall in love with books just sort of reignited that whole love for me, myself, and remembering how much I loved books as a kid. And I started thinking, you know, I could do this. And I was primarily raising my kids. I was always working part-time jobs or whatever, but I was mostly a stay-at-home mom. And so I just started thinking, you know, I could probably write a book for kids. And so I think when my youngest was about one, so I have three. And when my youngest was about one, I finally thought I'm going to take a class about how to write a novel because I'd never attempted a full book. So I took this really basic community college class, you know, not a credit class, but like for the community adult class kind of a thing. And it was how to write your first novel. It was like very basic, but it was just what I needed to have a little bit of structure to get me on the path. And so I wrote my first book. That's 20 years ago now. My youngest has just turned 20. So I wrote that book. I just kept writing more books and more books and more books. And then it was a few years before I really felt, okay, well, now I know I can write a book. Can I get a book published? That was the next thing. And so I went back to school and I got my MFA and I graduated in 2014. So that's, you know, a big chunk of time between writing that first book, writing a lot of books, going back to school, also learning the business, you know, in all of those years. And so that it was a slow transition. And it wasn't really a career transition. It was more just sort of, this is what I want my career to be. It just took me a little while to get there.
One thing I always love about creatives when they are upfront about the fact that there are many, many drafts that no one will ever see before there's actually the final product that is out there in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot.
I think that goes for painters and musicians and everyone, mm-hmm. is that there's a lot of work that has to go into actually finally having something that you also can go, oh, okay, now it's ready. Now it's ready to go public with this and see what happens.
And the extra challenge is, like, even if you feel like a book is ready, okay, I want to try to publish this, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen. So there's always kind of that balance as well as a writer.
How do you approach developing your characters and crafting the storylines for them? What is your process when you think about how all those things come together?
I think it's pretty different for each one. I mean, my general process is that once the idea is in my head, I will write many, many, many pages just kind of exploring that idea. But how that idea hits me comes in different ways. I've had moments where there's a little voice in my head and I can like feel a character out there. And I just start kind of feeling out that character's personality. I've had times where I just really want to write something about a particular setting, and then I have to figure out how to bring in all the other pieces to that setting. I've had situations where it's like a what if question, and then I have to figure, you know, so there's sort of like a lot of different ways the spark happens. And then once I have my main character voice, at least, I will write probably a good 25,000 words, at least, exploring that story idea. And then going back to the beginning and firming up the beginning. And some writers always just want to kind of like plow through to the end, but I tend to go back to the beginning and just refine and refine and refine until I feel really confident that this is what my story is. And then I can push through to the end. And if I can't figure out that part, then it sits unfinished in my computer for a really long time. I have a lot of those.
Is there a character in your computer right now that you wish you could kind of find that final storyline for?
There's a lot of characters on my computer. Yes.
Is there one in particular? Do you mind sharing one of them?
There's one story. So I'm actually co-writing a project with a friend, and it's the first time I've ever tried co-writing. And we are working on this story where we each have a point of view of a sister in the book. And my sister is the older sister, hers is the younger. And both girls have a solstice birthday. One is a winter solstice, the other is a summer solstice. And it's sort of this Italian folk magic, eco dystopian, like crazy project that we both love so much. But I will fully admit having a really hard time trying to like figure out how to do that. And I think part of it is because it's a co-writing project and that's different for me. And then part of it is just maybe not necessarily having the time to really sit down with that character. But she's someone I do hope to bring to life. And actually, my birthday is winter solstice and my co-writer's is a summer solstice. And that's kind of how it all got started. So we have like a lot of personal connections to it.
You know, you write what you know.
Yeah, right.
And you've also done, you know, books where you've written and you've worked with illustrators, though. So you've had experience with kind of a partnership in crafting something. Would you like mm-hmm. to go share, you know, some of the children's books you've done where you've had the illustration and then you yourself have shown up as the writer?
Yeah, well, with the picture book biographies, those were traditionally published with Bloomsbury. And that process, you're pretty separate for a while. I wrote the text and then the publisher takes that and then they find the illustrator and then they work with the illustrator for a while. And you're not really collaborating with the artist for a bit. And then they'll send you some sketches and I can't speak for all situations, but in my situation, I was allowed to have some input and say, oh yeah, like I love that. Or could we add this or we could take out that. And it's not totally up to me as the author in that situation, because there's a whole team behind it, you know, making that decision. I would say though, when I was doing Monolith, which is my most recent one, which is self-published book, I did get to have that creative control. However, I'm still collaborating with people. I'm still collaborating with an artist, still collaborating with an editor, still collaborating with beta readers and things like that. So that's just part of the process. I actually really love that part of the process. I think that coming together as a team, whether you do it traditionally or self-publishing, is really fun. I don't know that all writers feel that way, but I really like that part.
Middle grade fiction often tackles important issues and themes. What do you tend to explore in your books and why are they significant for this age group?
My middle grade, the books are wildly different, but I definitely hit on similar themes of I want my characters to have a certain amount of agency in their story. I want them to feel like they have the freedom to explore their world, whether that's like an actual adventure or it's their backyard or it's their family. I want these children in these stories to have the ability to ask questions, have the ability to feel things, react to things, and be okay in those situations. And so, you know, whether it's a treasure hunt story or hike to home is figuring out what your home is, you know, chosen family versus real family, things like that. Like, I want the characters in those books to be able to have the ability to feel through those situations. So that's a big thing for me. Agency, exploration. Tend to put my characters in situations where they can't rely on their cell phones all the time. You know, everything I write is contemporary. I would say the Dare Sisters is the 90s, but I still try to keep a lot of the contemporary things out of the picture in some way because I want it to be more about the relationships with the characters. And they're all kind of adventurous, mysterious, exploration. And that's, I mean, that's just a reflection of what my childhood was like. I grew up very rural. I was always in a creek. and I had a lot of freedom because I was Gen X baby, which is kind of the joke, you know, that the Gen X generation is just kind of free range chickens, basically. And but I really like that. And I think that that's important for kids today, especially. I don't think they have quite as much freedom for a lot of reasons. So yeah, so try to do that in my book.
We're going to take a short break to hear from our sponsors.
I'm Scarlett Johansson. My family relied on public assistance to help provide meals for us. These meals fueled my involvement in theater and the arts as a child, which fostered my love for acting. The Feeding America network of food banks helps millions of people put food on the table. You can join the movement to end hunger by donating, volunteering, and advocating. Because when people are fed, futures are nourished. Join the movement to end hunger at feedingamerica.org/act now. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
And we're back with the Girls That Create podcast on Word of Mom Radio. My guest today is writer Jess Rinker. So in recent years, there has been a growing emphasis on promoting literacy and a love of reading among children. How do you think children's authors can contribute to this movement, particularly in today's fast-paced world?
That's a hard question to answer. I think that the main thing that writers can do, and writers do a lot of things. This is one of the things as an author that I always feel kind of intimidated because so many authors are amazing activists on top of being amazing writers. I want to fall into that category, but I'm really a very introverted person. I'm not outgoing. I don't put myself out there in those situations. So it's tough for me. I guess for me, it's sort of the best thing that I can do as a writer and the best thing that all writers can do is just write the best story that you can write. So whatever level it is, whether you're doing, you know, early readers or novels for teens or graphic novels or whatever, whatever the story is to just write the best story that you can write. You can't really control all of the other things. You can't necessarily make kids read. You know, we just have to give them a lot of content, a lot of variety of content, a lot of different backgrounds, a lot of different voices, a lot of different types of storytelling. Because I think that what it really boils down to is whether they're watching a movie or listening to an audiobook or honestly even playing some of the video games that are out there, it boils down to story and the idea that what really breeds empathy and compassion and understanding and knowledge is story. And story comes out in a million ways. I love books. I grew up on books. Most people my age grew up on books. I hardly had television when I was a kid just because my parents didn't have a lot of money. We didn't have cable or anything like that. But kids today aren't us. And so I think it's like, we can't just be like, you have to read this physical big fat book. There's so many ways for kids to get so much out of a story. So open mind, write, because you can write for anything. There's like so much that we can write for. I don't necessarily know how to do all of it, but I do try. I mean, I've got picture books, middle grade chapter books of young adult. Like I do try to hit like all the different categories, but there's graphic novels. There's the games, the stories of the different video games. And I only know that from my own kids. I don't play them, but I'm honestly astonished by some of them. They're amazing. So I just think that we have to have an open mind and just write the best thing that we can write.
It's true. Because I think when as a parent, and sometimes it's hard when you're presenting this story, this book, this, I am going to gift you this thing that's from my childhood and I love it so much and you shall love it too. And they're like, eh.
They're like, what? Just like this big fat classic book.
You know? Yeah. And they even try to read it and you hear the worst thing, which is like, yeah, I just couldn't finish it. Like,
yeah, right.
I don't get you, lady.
Yeah, exactly. They're all just so different. I mean, I have even just my three kids, like my oldest was a really big reader of traditional novels and things like that. My middle child was more into graphic novels. she read a little bit, but she really was into graphic stuff. And then my youngest was more so audio books because he struggled to actually read. And so he really got into audio books and he loves movies and things like that. So I think it's just kind of eye-opening to me that we can write for so many things. And books are very important. And reading is extremely important as a skill, even, you know, just for your future. But as far as all of the really good things that we get out of books, we can get out of story in a lot of different ways.
Absolutely. I think it's interesting you bring that up because I recently had a discussion with a friend who shared with me that she has realized very later in life that she is dyslexic and that she has struggled so much, but she loves stories and reading and getting lost in the moment. And it takes her a while to read a book, but then she can also listen to a book. And the struggle she had when she was younger, because she didn't fit the mold for what a reader should be. And it was just very, very hard for her. And now to kind of recognize that. And also as in our discussion, we were saying, it's not about how fast you read the story. It's how you consume the story. And what do you take away from the story? And can you have a conversation about the story at the other end of that when you finish the book or the story?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Whether it's audio or, yes, movies or video games.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look at The Last of Us that turned into that show. I don't know if you saw that, but my daughter was always like, you have to watch this game. You have to watch this game. And I'm not into video games, but I was amazed by that one. And then it turned into an HBO show. I mean, it's a fantastic story. So, yeah, we can't write off all of that stuff.
Why is it important for writers to continue challenging themselves? One thing I've appreciated about your catalog is that you have tried different ages and different types of books and different kind of storylines.
Well, I don't know how to speak for like all writers, but I think that the one thing about writing that I really love, and I think about all art, is that you never really master it. I'm never going to write the perfect book. Even if I wrote something that was a huge award winner, you're still always going to have this mindset, I want to keep doing better. I always want to do better. So I think writers should challenge themselves. I love when I get to go to Highlights, for example. I have taught at Highlights Foundation, which is, for anyone who doesn't know, it's a very big foundation that supports kid lit writers, you know, whether it's picture books to YA, whatever. And they do all these wonderful retreats. And I have gone there as faculty and taught, and I've gone there as volunteer to help, and I've gone there as an attendee to learn. And I'm actually going again in April as an attendee to learn. And I think those are the kinds of things that you have to keep doing to keep yourself fresh, keep yourself in the community, keep yourself aware of what's going on in the publishing world. Writing is such a private thing for most of us, but publishing is an entirely different beast. So yeah, you can write for yourself from, you know, till you die. But if you want to be out there in the world and you want to be relevant and you want to be read by kids or adults, then I think challenging yourself is really important. That is why I have books in every category. I'm not a good brand writer. Some writers are really good. You know, like Rick Riordan, you know what you're going to get with a Rick Riordan book kind of a thing. And obviously he does really well and they're very great books and been very successful. For me, it's more like, well, I want to try this now, and I want to try this, and I want to try this.
And speaking of trying something, tell me about Wandering Moth Press and your latest book, Monolith.
Yeah, so this is so funny because I think I'm the most excited about this book. It's book number 7, I think. And, you know, my first 6 were traditionally published with big houses, with Bloomsbury and Macmillan. And Epic for Kids, which is like a digital platform for the schools. And I'm very, very grateful for those opportunities. I had a wonderful time with every editor I worked with all of the publisher. It was all wonderful experience. And then 2020 happened, and my books primarily came out over 2020, 21, and 22. So there were no school visits. There were no festivals. That we couldn't do anything as authors. And so one of my publishers actually closed, one of my imprints. So I think it was apparent to me that I had to make a decision for myself of not everything I write is going to get picked up by a publisher. And I had a couple things. Monolith went out on sub traditionally, didn't get picked up, got really close with a very big house, but ultimately did not get picked up. So I wrote that book in 2020 and I kind of let it go for a little while and then had some major life changes. My husband was diagnosed with cancer and it was pretty serious. We had to move a couple times and shift our whole lives around. And I was kind of in a state of, I couldn't write anything new at the moment, but I really needed a project to work on. I think any creative person in any realm, the project is the thing that kind of keeps you together. And so I pulled Monolith out. And what if I decided to just publish this on my own? I knew it was in good shape and through editing with my agent. It had been through beta readers. It had gone on sub. It got great feedback for the most part. There were no major things. And I was like, what if I just did this, you know, by myself? What would happen? Took me a really long time to pull the trigger because I definitely was closed-minded to the idea of self-publishing. But then I started to do my research and I realized that there's so many tools out there available to us. It is a tremendous amount of work if you want to do it really well. It really is. And you still need to either buy a cover or pay for a designer, pay for a formatter, pay for some editing, you know, all of those things you still should do for a quality product. We moved back in with family for a little while, so well, we still are living with family right now. So I was like, I got a little extra money, so I'm going to do this. And it's been an absolute blast, so I'm really glad that I did it.
What advice would you give to aspiring authors, especially those who are considering writing for children?
I mean, you just have to keep writing and writing and writing. And then, and again, it's like the beast of writing and the beast or the gift or the craft of writing and the beast of publishing are two very different things. One huge thing to do if you are writing, if you're seriously writing, is to be willing to have other people look at your work, you know, and get some eyes on it, have some feedback, be able to take that feedback, be able to understand how to use feedback when you know you should use it and not when you shouldn't use it. And it's like a discerning process, but starting that collaboration really early on is very helpful. I was in critique groups pretty quickly after I wrote my first book. Because it was that I was like, okay, well, I need to know if it's actually any good because I like it, but does anyone else want to read this? And you have to be able to have thick enough skin for that to happen. So that's the first thing. And then when it comes to publishing, I think throw yourself into the business as much as you can, whether or not you're just research, you can research everything online, do the work online at least. But there's also conferences. And I interned with literary magazines. I interned with literary agency. So I got to see a lot of the business on the inside before I had an agent. I really understood how that industry worked. That also has helped me tremendously with self-publishing because I know what the specs are supposed to be. I know what a standard book is supposed to look like. I know what the expectation is. I will tell you, I have on some self-publishing groups right now where people come in and they say, how long should a kid's book be? First of all, you can Google that. And second of all, if you're coming in with literally like you obviously aren't doing any research at all, it's not going to be a good book. Like you have to do some work. So yeah, keep writing and do your research.
I want to circle back to Joe, your husband, and his cancer diagnosis. Can you tell us what inspired you to write about your role as his caregiver? Because you've been very open about that online and have had a lot of response to that.
Mm-hmm.
Both positive and negative, but I would like to point out highly more positive.
Yeah, there has been a little bit of negative, but it's been mostly
positive.
And that's
the internet. That's just the beast.
Yeah. So I will say to Joe, from early on, there was a couple things I put online, just like on my private blogs or whatever. And I would check with Joe and be like, is it okay that I do this? Are you okay that I'm putting this out here? Because, you know, he's the one that has cancer and he's the one that's his body is fighting us. And he's like, I want you to write what you want to write. And so I kind of had his blessing from the beginning of it. And honestly, it was mostly out of necessity. I have to write through everything that I'm thinking or feeling. I don't necessarily post all of that, but there were some things that came out of that process. I feel like I need to share this. It's this necessity of having that community around you. When Joe was first diagnosed, it was so sudden and so shocking because he wasn't sick. There was really no symptoms until all of a sudden there were symptoms and all of a sudden he had stage 4cancer. And I'm not in that state of shock anymore because it's been a little more than a year, but I was definitely in a state of shock for a while and really lonely because he's my person and he's still here and he's doing really well. But it felt like he was ripped away from me because of that treatment. It's so awful. It's awful for anyone, whether you're the patient or the caregiver. And I felt very much like I was on my own last January 2023. And so writing was it. I probably have 50,000 words of awful drivel journal from the beginning because I'm just going to write all of this out, you know, day by day. I did put some stuff online that I felt was a little bit more balanced. It wasn't me just venting to my computer. It was me actually feeling a little bit more thoughtful, a little bit more stable. I'll fully admit I have not felt stable through the whole thing, but you know, what I put online is little bit more together. And then I was asked by a cancer organization who I was connected with, set me and Joe up with volunteers to talk to. So I got to talk to like a volunteer caregiver, and he talked to a volunteer patient, you know, survivor, cancer survivor. And then they asked me if I would write an article about the specifics of caregiving and cancer and health related concerns when you're living in a really rural area, because at the time we were living in West Virginia and it was very challenging, and we left. I mean, now we're back. We're in New Jersey living with family. So I wrote that piece for them, and then Insider got a hold of it, and they, Insider magazine, interviewed me. And the way they do their column is, we're going to tell your story from your point of view, but we're going to write it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little weird, but I was like, whatever, publicity. It helps the cancer organization out. It gets the story out there. And it, and healthcare in rural areas is a major challenge. And even in New Jersey, where I live, we are still very rural. We are still not very close to big hospitals. Even people think New Jersey's New York, but it's really not. Yes, it's way more accessible than West Virginia, but it's still pretty rural. So anyway, interviewed with Insider. They posted it, their version of my story, which went completely viral. And I was like inundated with emails and private messages and direct messages, all this stuff. And it was insane. Most of it was really fun. Most people were really wonderful. And it was great conversations about their situations, having cancer, living rural, them having to leave rural areas also, which was like very eye-opening. I got a couple of negative responses as well. People that thought I was a city slicker and, you know, why are you moving to the country? You know, stuff like that. And I was like, I have always lived in the country for your, you know, for your information. But, you know, whatever. It was fine. So yeah, that was kind of how that all played out. And right now, Joe's doing really well. He's actually doing another round of radiation right now. I'm in West Virginia right now doing this podcast with you because I'm going to do some work on our house here because we're going to list it for sale soon. So yeah, just life just keeps going on.
Can you share just a little bit about how writing has allowed you to process all of this? Is that something you would recommend to someone else, another caregiver, just whatever, you know, and process it whatever way that they can, whether it be through writing, maybe it's just blasting music as loud as you can, screaming in the wind. I don't know, but, you know, just finding something that lets you work through your own emotions when something is happening to your person.
Yeah, well, screaming in the wind definitely happened also. There was a few days when we were still living in West Virginia where we were getting ready to move and had to get rid of a bunch of stuff. And I, no, not kidding you, went out and made a huge bonfire and was just smashing things with a sledgehammer and burning them for hours. And I had the best time ever. So sometimes as a caregiver, you just need to let loose, you know, do it legally. But in West Virginia, you can burn whatever you want.
Kind of rule.
Yes. In New Jersey, that probably wouldn't fly. But yeah, I would say writing is, for me, that is the, it's really the only thing. I know I'm not good in therapy. I've done therapy many times. It's not really the thing that does it for me. I have very good friends I have conversations with that, you know, especially when Joe was in like the really thick of treatment, we were living in a hotel and people would come visit us. And it was sort of these lily pad visits, you know, they were keeping me afloat each day. Like, okay, next week, I know this person's coming. Next week, I know that person's coming. And I would just be like, okay, I can get to this next visit. I can get to this next visit. It's a lot of day by day living. It still is. It doesn't completely change, but let yourself reach out to those people and accept the help when they offer the help. And if you are a writer or a painter or you like music or whatever, I think those things are so valuable. I'm not really an emotional person. I'm a pretty analytical person in my day-to-day life. I don't get really weepy. I don't know how to explain it. I do all of that in my writing, I guess. You know, I do process all of the emotions in my writing. Or if I know that I need to have a good cry, I'll go sit in my car and put on the right song, you know, stuff like that. So sometimes you have to lean into it. You can't avoid it. Whatever method works for you, you have to let yourself feel it. And, you know, we do that in a lot of different ways. But yeah, writing is a huge one for me. That's definitely the main one. And then music, and then destroying things and burning them.
Whatever works. So what projects are you working on now, and what can we expect to see from you in the future?
Well, I don't know what you can expect to see because I don't have any contracts right now. Because of this whole life change, you know, I am very much trying to find quote unquote real job right now. I have a lot of gigs like I always have, but now the necessity to having something a little bit more secure, that's like my priority right now. But I'm still working on stuff. I actually just won a sponsorship for a retreat next month, which is at Highlights also. And it's specifically for women who are writing through trauma. And so I will be going to Highlights next month, and it's with the Rebecca Dykes Writers Group. And for anyone who doesn't know what that is, I don't know how well known it is, but the woman who founded it lost her daughter several years ago. She was raped and murdered by her, I don't know if it was an Uber driver or taxi driver or something like that. And then her mom started this foundation specifically for women who have been survivors of trauma who write. And so I won the sponsorship to attend the retreat. And the book that I'm working on, which I'm maybe like a third of the way through, is called The Girl in the Window. And it is a haunted house / domestic violence story. So it's definitely the first time I've ever worked on an issue book, as they call them. I'm not an issue book writer. I want the issues, like Monolith is a really good example of how I want to write an issue book, where you've got some really heavy things happening in the story. It's not like being hammered into you. This is the issue. This is the issue. And so The Girl in the Window is similar, but probably it's going to be a little bit more heavy. I don't know that it's going to stay middle grade. It may have to be bumped up to YA. But that's what I'll be working on at this retreat. That is my biggest goal. And so I hope that will be the next book that comes into the world. I would like that to go the traditional route, because the self-publishing route, although it's really, really fun, is so much work. And once I get a real job, hopefully, I'm not going to have the time to devote to self-publishing this. So yes, that's what I'm hoping will happen.
Last question, important question. Where can people find you online so they can buy Monolith?
So Monolith, the nice thing about Monolith is, since I did all of the right things, is that you can get it at any bookstore. Even if it's not on the shelf, any bookstore can order it for you. You can also go to my website at jessrinker.com and you can order it through there. You can get it on Amazon. So yeah, you can get it anywhere you want to go. I always would rather people support their local bookstores, their independent bookshops, because they do amazing things for authors and their communities. And your store, even if it's really small and doesn't have it on the shelf, they should have that book. And likewise with any of my books. A lot of my books aren't on the shelves anymore, but you can still get them. Oh, and I'm also on Instagram at Jess Rinker Author.
Fantastic. Jess Rinker, thank you so much for being on the Girls That Create podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to see you again after all these years. Yes. Or at least talk to you again.
Absolutely. As I mentioned in the introduction, Jess was one of the first creator spotlights we ever did on the Girls That Create website. So it's been a delight to have her back on the platform.
Just to have us back together.
To all of you tuning in, thank you for joining us on the Girls That Create podcast on Word of Mom Radio. Please go out in person to support your local bookstores if you can. You can also purchase books through bookshop.org, which connects readers with independent booksellers worldwide. They are a Girls That Create affiliate partner, which means you can visit our bookshop.org page to see all the books mentioned on this podcast and the Girls That Create website. We'll put the link in the show notes. Here's our closing theme song by Smith Sisters and the Sunday Drivers. Till next time, this is Erin Prather Stafford.
She is sure.
She is sure.
She is strong.
She is strong.
She is true.
She is true.
She is brave.
She is brave.
She is bold.
She is bold.
She is you.
She is you.
She is sure.
She is sure.
She is strong.
She is strong.
She is true.
She is true.
She is brave. Woman. She is strong.